Jesus' name this evening. Thank you all for coming. For the order of the service this evening, we'll be having I'll have a short devotional. We'll have a short time of prayer, and then Dwight will be sharing with us on a topic about child training. So we'll have a couple of songs at this time.
Rejoice, the Lord is King.
Rejoice, the Lord is King. Your Lord and King adore. For joy's defense and singing and triumph ever more. Lift up your heart, lift up your voice. Rejoice again, I say. Rejoice.
Sometimes we will hear the moderator say, he wants to welcome each one here, and especially the visitors. Tonight I'm going to say I want to especially welcome the children. Dwight will be sharing on a topic about child training, and you may feel kind of out of the loop. But maybe another way to put it would be he's going to be sharing a topic on parent training. So I'm going to say we're all in the same condition here, the same shape. We're all here to learn equally. When I thought about that, my mind went to a time when my wife and I took the opportunity to visit a neighboring church in the little town of Purdon. I think it was a little Methodist church, maybe. There was something going on that Sunday that we canceled our church services in our home church. There was a funeral in another community or something that everybody wanted to go except us. So we took the opportunity to go to our local, just a couple miles from our house church, to kind of see how they do things. We walked in the door and I looked around. How many children do you think were there? There were no children there. How many youth? There were no youth there. How many young married couples? None. How many middle-aged couples? None. How many elderly men? None. Except the pastor. There was a very round elderly man that was a pastor. And aside from us, there were only 9 old ladies, probably in their upper 60s to their lower 90s. I learned something that day. And I remember that the pastor preached a good sermon. He preached a good message. I don't especially remember any of that, but I learned some other things. I learned to appreciate our heritage and just simply the fact that we have all ages and all from all age groups in our churches. So I want to especially welcome the children this evening. Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 12, I'm going to read just a couple of verses. And now, Israel, what does the Lord thy God require of thee but to fear the Lord thy God, to walk in all his ways and to love him, and to serve the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul, to keep the commandments of the Lord and his statutes, which I command thee this day for thy good. Behold, the heaven and the heaven of heavens is the Lord's, thy God, the earth also with all that therein is. I trust that as Dwight shares about the topic, he will be speaking to us about these commandments from the Bible on child training. And I know we're all here with a heart to learn. We just yearn it affects us all. I believe all of us here are either one or the other, and most of us are both as far as parents and children. At this time, I'll take your prayer requests.
Well, I also greet each of you in Christ's name this evening. It's a pleasure to be here with you. That was several weeks ago. Paul Miller was here, and he preached a message on Sunday morning. Not sure what the title was necessarily, but it was on child training, and he mentioned that it sort of puts him out of his comfort zone because he doesn't feel that he was very successful. And I look at my own experience, and I realize the final results aren't in yet. Recently, the youth were at our place for a singing, and I mentioned something to a few of them that I think they might be in as ideal a position to address this topic as anyone. They've experienced it not too long ago, being trained, and they have their ideals, I think, at least some, maybe not a conscious thing of writing down the ideals, but you have an idea of what you anticipate you will do as parents someday if you have children. And one of them remarked, "Yeah, but as soon as they start talking, it's immediately, yes, but, you know, you don't have the experience yet." Well, I have some experience, but as I said, the final results aren't in yet. And so I guess I would like to take the attitude that recently Oren was in the conversation and talking a little bit about training children and so on, and he just made the remark that when we talk about subjects like that, he likes the way Paul addressed Timothy, and that is found in 2 Timothy 2, verse 7. It says, "Consider what I say, and the Lord give thee understanding in all things." And I want to approach it that way tonight. Things that I share, consider them, but the Lord give you understanding to know how to apply these things in your own home with your unique situation. My uncle and aunt from Florida, after their first son was born, he was a very well-behaved child, and he, you know, as a youngster, he was a, you know, we would call him a young gentleman. And later they remarked, you know, after they had their first child and he was growing up, they felt they were ready to write a book about child training. Number two came along and said they were starting to have questions about their ability to do it. And until three and four came along, they knew they weren't ready to write a book about it. So recently, David Yoder had a message on spiritual warfare, and he related to how in the spiritual warfare, I think Satan uses the biological or chemical means as well. It's not all on the front lines. And I think parenting probably comes in that category where Satan probably wants us as parents to take a little bit of anesthesia to get us to not be alert. So we aren't aware of what is going on with our children, how they're developing. And if we do that, I think it gives Satan an avenue where he can have access to our children. And it's important that we as parents are spiritually vibrant, we have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, and we depend on him for guidance. Back to my aunt and uncle who, after three or four, they knew they weren't ready to write a book. You know, I think the sooner we come to the place where we realize we don't have the answers of ourselves, the better for us. We need to depend on a higher power for the answers, to know how to best relate and train children. In 1 Samuel 2, verse 3, just a verse that stood out to me recently as I came across that. As I think about child training, why do we do the things we do? Why do we want our children to behave in church? Why do we want them to, you know, make sure they act properly if we're in a restaurant or whatever? What are our motives? And this verse just spoke to me. The last part of 1 Samuel 2, verse 3, it's part of Hannah's song of praise after Samuel was born. It says, "For the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed." So often, when we're at church, I know I face the thing of, if my children are misbehaving, ooh, what should I do? What are people thinking? But that dare not be a motive of doing what we do. If correction is necessary, do it, but do it with the correct motivation, because it is necessary that children learn to behave in church. I think a very basic thing in helping us in training our children in a godly way is just simply the attitude we have towards children. Do we see them as a blessing? And I appreciate what Marvin said tonight. He is thankful and he wants to especially welcome the children here tonight. Children are a blessing from the Lord. Just a few scripture references that bring that out, how it is a blessing from God. In Genesis 1:28, this was before the fall. God blessed them, and God said unto them, "Be fruitful, and multiply, and replenish the earth." It was a blessing that he was giving Adam and Eve and telling them, have children. In Genesis 9, verse 1, right after the flood, says, "And God blessed Noah and his sons and said unto them, Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth." So it was a blessing. And I think it's very important that we as parents view children as a blessing, not as an inconvenience. 1 Samuel 2, verses 20 and 21. This was after Elkanah and Hannah took Samuel to minister with Eli the priest in the tabernacle. It says, "And Eli blessed Elkanah and his wife and said, The Lord give thee seed of this woman for the loan which is lent to the Lord. And they went unto their own home. And the Lord visited Hannah so that she conceived and bare three sons and two daughters." It was a blessing from God. And so just throughout Scripture, I think we see that God views children as a blessing. Jesus stated in Matthew 19:14, "Suffer little children to come unto me and forbid them not." After we were married, it changed our lifestyle to some degree, but independence had to go out the door, especially after children came. Our lives really revolve around these little babies. You can't just, why don't we go out tonight and visit someone? You know, it takes time to make sure the baby's diaper's changed. And, if it's cold and windy, that's a consideration. And if you have a number of children, more frequently you stay at home because one of them's sick. Or, it really infringes on a person's independence after children come on the scene. But is that an inconvenience? Well, it's something you deal with, and we might not look at it as a positive of losing your independence in that way, but it's important that we view children as a blessing from the Lord. I think some of the view of children changed in my ancestry. My great-grandfather, when he was a young fella, he grew up in a family of 16 children. I think 7 of them were half-siblings and 8 full siblings, and he was number 15 in the line of 16. And as a youngster, as I was growing up, I heard that he made the remark that he's not going to get married until he is older because he doesn't want a whole line of noisy children. And another source said that he said he's not going to get married at all. Well, marry he did, and he waited until he was older. He was around 33, but the problem was he married a 19-year-old girl. And my grandfather was number 11 of the 15 children they had. But I think that mentality had an effect on that home. My grandfather had a pretty rough upbringing. I would say, from things that my grandpa said, I would say he was roughed up versus raised and nurtured. Maybe just one incident. I'm not sure was this regular, but I know my grandpa said that sometimes instead of getting spanked, he got whacked across the head flat-handed, where he ended up on the floor. And my great-grandfather was not known as a very patient man. Well, he was 33, 15 children. The older you get, I'm not sure that patience necessarily increases with youngsters. My grandfather came along. They had 2 children. My grandma had some complications, and they were only able to have 2 children. And I'm not sure, is that what caused a difference in the view of children then or not? But I think my grandpa really wanted to give my dad and his sister a good home. And they were concerned about their welfare. There were still rough edges. I'd say my dad grew up in a home that was pretty good and solid, but had a number of rough edges yet. And I look at the home I grew up, and I think my dad probably did a better job than my grandpa did in developing a relationship with us children. And I look at some of my siblings and the relationship they have with their children that are growing, and I think there's a continued improvement. I think a godly home gives children a foundation to go beyond where we are. And I don't think that should threaten us as parents if our children go beyond us in whether it's relationship with the Lord, relating with fellow man, being more effective in God's kingdom. I think that should be the heartbeat of every parent here tonight, to see their children go beyond where you are. And I would say this, good-sized families are nothing to be ashamed of. We have 6 children, 10 and under, and sometimes people look at us and, boy, that was about a year ago. We were in Walmart, and often we take 2 carts, and at least one of them's loaded with children. And we were walking down the aisle, and a young couple comes the other way and went past us. I didn't notice it, but Karen said, as soon as they were past us, they just doubled over laughing like crazy. And it was obviously directed at our caravan. Do we need to be ashamed of that? No, we don't need to be ashamed of that. I think we can just be glad that we gave them a good time. But no, that does not embarrass me if people make remarks or think it's sort of funny that we have a row of children. I think they are a blessing from God, and we appreciate them. Okay, I'd like to look at a number of scriptures, and these scriptures are dealing with the use of the rod, or as we would say, spanking children. It would be sort of nice if Solomon would have written a story on how to do it, where, you know, he could have related how he was working with his 4-year-old and he told him to do something and the boy was just obnoxious and disobeyed him. And so Solomon takes him to a private room and talks with him and administers a spanking, and we know how many whacks he gave. And the child responds, you know, with a, thank you, Daddy, for doing this, for giving me security and stuff. No, it would be nice to have some specific accounts of how are spankings to be administered, but I'm not aware of any specific accounts in Scripture where it tells us, now, this is the way to do it. We have the principle of it is something to do. And I'd just like to look at some of these Scriptures. I'll be going over a number of them fairly rapidly. In Proverbs 22, verse 15, it says, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. Proverbs 13:24. He that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. 19, verse 18. Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying. 23, verse 13. Withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. 29, verse 15. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. And verse 17, correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. So here are some scriptures that are very, very plainly teach that it is necessary to use a paddle or a rod in correcting our children at times. And it's not something that we as parents delight in doing, to hurt our children. But I think it's something when it is administered, there should be no question in the child's mind if contact was made. It should be given hard enough so that there's some crying involved, I believe. It's supposed to hurt. It's supposed to be a punishment. It's a consequence for wrongdoing. Maybe I'll bring this in right now. There's a verse in Galatians 3, verse 24. It says, wherefore the law was our schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ, that we might be justified by faith. And I think the better that children understand what law is as youngsters, they can appreciate more what mercy and grace is later on. And I think just the simple thing of the law says, don't lie. If you lie, there are consequences. If you cheat, if you steal, we go to the room, wherever we do it, and we give a spanking. There's a consequence. You came up to the law, you disobeyed, consequences follow. And as they grow up with that, I think it gives them the potential ability at least, to appreciate more what mercy is about. And I would also like to say that in the spanking, there's an appropriate age for it. I remember in our children, Anthony was about 6 weeks old when we detected a definite will thing of him, and it took us by surprise. I didn't know 6 weeks old babies can display a will like that. Well, a 6 week old baby, do you spank him with a paddle? Well, no, we didn't do that. But I remember I took him and I just held him firmly until he stopped making himself stiff, whatever. I don't know, was that exactly the best thing to do or not, but that's what I did. And then another, Michael, came along, and I don't think he displayed a will until he was about 6 months old. And so, you know, there's quite a variation in how children respond, and they display this sinful inner nature that they're born with. But I think at some time, as they come to an age where that's appropriate, we need to apply spankings. And sometimes I'm a bit concerned when we read a lot of books where we need to handle certain personalities in just a certain way and get away from the spanking. I think spanking is scriptural truths are universal. And when we try to tiptoe around the issue of spanking and we say we need to treat a different way, some red flags go up in my mind. I'm not saying there aren't cases where we need to do some of that, but I think spanking is just about the best tool there is for a child to learn obedience. Now, we talked about spanking more as a thing of discipline, but the psalmist in Psalm 23, he also says, "Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me." The rod is not just a thing of showing people that we're in authority. We carry the stick and we terrorize people by that. That is not what it's for. But it is to give correction, to give security. In the New Testament, whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth. And so when we do spanking, don't do it out of reaction or when you're upset, but do it because you are concerned for that child. Do it out of a motivation of love. What do you have to say about spankings? Maybe the children have a response to that one. Youth fellas, are any of you thankful that you got spanked when you were young? How many? Okay, look at that, fellas. I think all the youth fellas' hands were up. They're thankful that they got spankings. You know, I think as older people, we look back and we see that, yes, it was for our benefit. Do you have any comments on the issue of spanking, something I overlooked, or maybe you want to add or correct?
I guess we're aware that corporal punishment is a bit of a hot button issue in the public world, mm-hmm.
I think it's something it is something that should be administered in private. It is not for the public scene. And I think if we as parents are consistent in disciplining at home, typically in the public scene, it's not a big problem. If it there something does go wrong in public and they act in an appropriate way, it can be dealt with later. Any other? Gary?
With regard to the term punishment, I remember, it seems like it was Donald Power a number of years ago giving a definition on punishment that that made it an end rather than a means to an end. And certainly there are punishments, like capital punishment, that is definitely that. I wouldn't say that all definitions of punishment have to have this in it. But basically, you've already addressed it, that punishment is to help the child and point the way and give a sense of security, and it's not an unloading of anger to pay back or something mm-hmm. like that.
And I would say, especially us as fathers, if we administer a spanking when we're seething on the inside, it's going to probably be abusive. Our arms are strong enough typically that it's going to be easy to do. I just don't do it if you're angry and upset on the inside. Make sure your spirit is right so that you can do it for the good of the child and be redemptive in it. Daryl.
Something I remember from faith mission days, which punishment would have been, or discipline would have been a pretty large part of faith mission, just because they were learning more slowly than other children. It was pretty easy. You could detect when they had done something. Sometimes it was kind of hard to tell if they were actually being bad or not, but you could often detect it by your own response to it. If you felt some anger, then they probably had done something wrong. So, the emotion wasn't a problem until you went to work with the problem, and then it became a problem. You did have to deal with your own feelings before you could help them at all. Mm-hmm. It just always was counterproductive when you were angry. When you did. Mm-hmm.
And speaking about your experience at Faith Mission, I was there as well, and it seems people say, well, the child is handicapped, so we daren't spank. I think often handicapped children might need an extra amount of discipline, but with that additional amount of affirmation and love as well. There were some other hands back there. David. Mark.
Well, one thing I would say, sort of a thought in the middle of this, one of the things that has been difficult maybe to always determine is that changeover from disciplining your child, spanking them, and then teaching them about God's love and forgiveness, where God doesn't strike when we do wrong. That sort of is an area that, you know, if a child accepts Christ at 6, do you no longer spank them after 6? Or do you still spank them and still try to teach them about forgiveness? That sometimes can be a little bit difficult, and I would, be open for private discussion on that.
Okay. Does someone have some discussion on that? Any input? I'm not sure that mine are old enough yet to stop the method. Arlen?
I'm just thinking out loud here. With the Lord, there's forgiveness. That doesn't minimize consequences. Hmm. Well, I'm not sure I said that right. It doesn't completely remove consequences. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if there is a way of
Mm-hmm. That's helpful. Brian?
The scripture says that whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth, even as a father, the son, in whom he delighteth.
Mm-hmm.
I think if your punishment of your child is done in the correct spirit, and with love and for his good, then it will be a demonstration of the way that God will deal with him throughout the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you for that. I've got a bunch of territory to cover. I think we'll move on now. One thing, that scripture, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction, I forget the exact words, drives it far from him. Spanking is not the only method. I think sometimes just simply having our children, giving them work that has a purpose to it, can help them not to have as much time to do foolish things as well. Just this past winter, we've been cutting quite a bit of firewood. And the children know the purpose for cutting firewood. It's so that during the winter we can go around the wood stove or up above the next story where there's a nice register and we can sit on there and we feel the heat. And they've helped quite readily. Sometimes, not all of them just are really anxious to get at it, to stack firewood and so on. But, you know, it gives a purpose. It's something to do. That's not just meaningless work, a filler of time, but it's something that has purpose. And I think that is something, well, the other day, you know, it felt like the children were getting a little noisy in each other's hair, and I just made the remark, it sounds like it's time to go stack some firewood. And, you know, I think sometimes just be proactive and give them things that are creative to do, and that can alleviate having so much free time where they tend to get into trouble a little more. It's not that they need to work all the time. They have plenty of time to read and play. But I think there are times when it's important that we give them things to do that have purpose. And it's good to also teach good work habits when they're still young. It's your 4 or 5 year olds. They can set the table if you take the time to train them, you know. They're sitting at the table 2-3 times a day. They know where plates and spoons and glasses go, basically. So, you know, you might have to help them, teach them a little bit. But taking the time to get them to help, sometimes it's easier to just do it yourselves. But in the long run, it saves parents a bunch of time if they are taught to work and to be helpful. Just insert this thing here. For you as older people, if young parents come to you with a question, you know, I'm facing this situation, how should I deal with it? Too frequently, I think we get responses like, well, I'm not sure, just sort of what you think's best, and we don't get a clear answer. And sometimes you might not have a clear answer, but I would encourage you, try to give an answer, at least a suggestion of something that you experience and that might work. And you might have to have 2 or 3 days to think about it, but I really would encourage you, if young parents come for advice, try to give some. Give some input into their lives. When this was just over a month before Anthony was born, Karen and I were, I forget, was it traveling to or from Alabama? We decided we're going to come up with a list of things that sort of ideals that we have for our children. So this is the original list of February 28th, 1999, entitled Family Ideals. And I'm just going to go down the list. Some of them I'll talk a little bit about it, and some of them I'll just mention. The first one we have is to sit still in church. One thing we dealt with, I forget how old Anthony was, probably 2 or 3. It seemed we would take a few things along, and it really didn't help him to be quiet. And someone gave us some helpful advice. They told us their experience and said, you know, when they took their children to church and they were dealing with that, they decided, let's not take any toys along. And they said, you know, that made the biggest difference for them. And so we tried some of that method. And if they don't have toys to play with, often they sit more quietly than if you take a whole mess of toys along. If the more toys you take, it seems to, the faster they can go through them. I'm okay with, you know, taking a little book along. Maybe something for them to page through, something that isn't noisy. Maybe one item or so. I'm not saying you may not do it, but I really would suggest if you have problems with your children being noisy, extra active, don't cater to them by giving them a lot of things to do as such. I think they can learn to sit quietly. One thing we've done is allow the children to draw, and I'm not quite sure exactly at what stage do we stop, and I open it for input. I think it's disturbing if people up here draw. I think I've heard that come across the pulpit already. And so I think that's one break-off point. Do I have other input? At what time should children stop drawing? Maybe you have other input as far as bringing things along to try to keep children quiet in church. Paul.
That was our experience, too, that when our children were smaller, it was easier to keep them quiet if they just had one or so items rather than a whole array.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay. Yes, Conrad. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea what age you were when you started taking the notes? Eight or so? Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you for that. Okay, the next one on the list is one verbal correction is enough. Consequences follow. And that's one that's tough to be consistent with. And we have not done it perfectly at all in the home when we tell one to do something and, you know, there's not immediate response then. Did you hear what I said? And maybe an eyebrow goes up and, you know, oh, yeah, I heard. And so slowly gets up and along the way he dawdles a bit and gets distracted again. You know, what is our response? And we have not always been consistent. It's our ideal that when a child understands what they're supposed to do, telling them one time should be enough, consequences should follow. But I'll admit, we do it imperfectly. That's been a struggle on, especially my part, to be consistent with that. But I think it does make for just a lot less frustration for us as parents if we, the more consistent we are with that. Any input? Okay, next one on the list, don't allow moodiness in the morning. I think that's a terrible habit when children are allowed to be moody in the morning just because it's their personality. I think that's something that a rod of correction can drive far from them. And later on, we have another family ideal was to have fairly consistent bedtime, and I think that can, we as parents have our part to do with that. Are the children getting to bed on time? And be fairly consistent with that. Eat a little bit of everything at the table. If you want your daughter-in-laws to appreciate you, why, I would encourage that. I know my wife has appreciated that my parents had us eat everything, a little bit of everything that was on the table, anything that was with main course types of things. I think picky eaters can sometimes be a frustration to some wives, and so do your daughters-in-law a favor and train your boys to eat a little bit of everything on the table. Another one we have is don't allow eyes to get bigger than stomach when they serve themselves. Just teaching them moderation as they go through food lines and stuff, and you know, some of our children are going through the food lines on their own now, and sometimes I'm not sure how well they do, really. Heard on Sunday there was a little problem with that with one. So Something we need to work on. Next one, teach them to do a job right and finish it. Just simply developing a good work habit where if they start something, if it's feasible at their age, to see it through and to do a good job. Wash hands after bathroom use. Work and play together. And the idea is to do it without a lot of squabbling. Take them with us to visit others. I think that is something that can be pretty important for families, to go as a family to visit older people. Help the children develop the ability to relate to people of different age groups, not just with their peers. I think that can be very helpful for them, and it's also good for us as parents to interact with people of different age groups. If anyone has anything to say at this point, feel free to interrupt. Marvin. And if it takes long, not just to step in, okay, well, get out of the way, I'll quick do it for you. It can be detrimental. Okay. Enjoy nature with them. Something I enjoy nature personally, and I think nature is just such a wholesome pastime to be able to observe God's handiwork. And I encourage you, enjoy nature with your children. Just recently, about a month ago, I had an experience that was a thrill for me and for some of my boys. I was finishing chores in the morning, coming in, and I heard a screech owl out in the grove. And so I imitated its call, and I got it to respond, and it came in, you know, like 8-10 feet from me and sort of flew low over my head a few times. And then I went in and told some of the family about what happened, and Vincent and Anthony, they wanted to go out and see if they can see it as well. And so we went back out, and after a bit, I got it to respond again, and it came real close and flew just low over our heads and land over here and fly back. And then it sat on a fence post and just 7-8 feet from me, and I told the boys, I'm going to see how close I can get to it. And so I walked over slowly towards it, and it actually allowed me to touch it. I'm not sure why, but I kept imitating its call, and after I touched it, flew away. And anyway, it ended up Vincent and Anthony touched it as well. It was just a thrilling experience for all of us to have that happen. So enjoy nature with your children, whether it's, you know, what going with your son or daughter, watching them shoot their first deer. There's a lot of different things of nature that you can do, whether it's flowers, butterflies. God's handiwork is marvelous, and the more you learn about nature, the more you realize there is to learn. Take time to read to them. I don't think there are any children who don't enjoy a good story. And I think just spending that time with children, reading to them, it helps them with their vocabulary, helps them academically, and it builds relationship, just where you are giving your attention to them. It's very, very helpful. Sing as a family. Something we do quite a bit as a family, especially in our devotions in the morning, and something that I want to continue, and I would encourage others to sing as a family. Keep family together on trips where possible. We don't have youth yet and older children, so I'm not sure how all that will play together, but I do like to see that when whole families are together to take a vacation or to go on a trip versus, you know, some are staying home and some are going away. There are times I realize where it just seems like the best thing to do. But as much as possible, I would encourage you to do things together as a family. Have family devotions be a time of free and relaxed atmosphere. I think sometimes we can get into a form where it's sort of stiff and there's not a free feeling when we have our family devotions, but I think it's good if you can develop a time of worship where the children feel relaxed, where they enjoy it. It may ask us as parents to be a little creative and have some variation in what we do for devotions, whether it's memorization, singing, Bible reading. One time we went through a Window on the World, which is sort of a children's edition of Explore World. So have that be a time that is relaxed and a free atmosphere. And don't talk about God only at devotions. Feel free to talk about God to your children throughout the day. Good table manners. Just the basics. Practice common courtesy at home. Please, thank you, excuse me, etc. The next one's probably one for the parents especially. Keep a sense of humor. Sometimes parenting can be a little frustrating and it looks big. But keep that sense of humor. Enjoy your children. Be able to laugh with them. Sometimes it seems parents, and I think we were in that shape at one time where, especially in the younger stage of parenting, you're almost nervous and a little tense, you know, in case they do, how should I respond? And enjoy the different stages that your children go through. Keep your sense of humor. Follow up on homework and school. Eat meals together as a family. Teach a child to keep his room neat by school age. Next one, above all, pointing them to God. I think that's so important that in our training, what is the motive behind it? It needs to be for the furtherance of God's kingdom, to train and equip our children so that they can be effective for God. Teach them to apologize. I'd like to spend a little bit of time on that. Maybe someone else has something on some of the other points before I go into that. Okay. This one is not just for young parents. This one will probably include everyone here. How to apologize. I think it's important that when children do wrong, it's important that they apologize and be specific what they're apologizing for. I'm sorry for hitting you, kicking you, lying, whatever. And I think the same is true for us as parents. And just an incident that happened when I was a child growing up, I'm not sure exactly how old I was. I'm guessing 10 to 11. I was with my dad out, and we had the feed grinder, and we were unloading, and Dad said something, and I made a remark. I'm not sure what it was, probably not the best remark, but it got my dad under the skin, so to speak, and he slapped me across the face, and it hurt. I guess a face hurt and a heart hurt, and he scolded me some for the way I responded. I'm not sure exactly what he said. It was about, I'd say, a week or two later, Dad was back in his bedroom studying for a topic, and as I recall, it was about a topic on the home. And this incident came to his mind, and he asked me to come back to the bedroom. And he, you know, just related that incident, and he apologized specifically for doing that. He just recognized that the reaction that he had was inappropriate. And, you know, I look back on that, I remember it, but I don't hurt about it. He apologized specifically for that incident. And I think it's important for us as parents, when we do wrong, have an inappropriate reaction, that we are specific in apologizing to our children. Recently at our men's meeting, Amos made a remark, just said, we can all... Maybe this is not quite word for word, but pretty close at least. We can all look back at situations where we failed that have caused children to go a wrong direction. And I think, you know, if... I want to be careful how I say this, but there are quite a number of families here of parents whose children have not turned out the way you really wish they would. And I would encourage, if there are instances that you can think of where you know you did something that was inappropriate, I think it's important to go back and apologize for those specific incidents. And I think that can be very healing in relationships. What their reaction will be, I don't know. But I think if we as parents are humble, free our hearts from pride, there's not a lot of pride involved in going back and apologizing for specifics. But I think it allows God to move in ways that is hindered when we have that pride and we don't confess these incidences. And so I think it's, there's a certain degree of humility involved in making general confessions of, you know, maybe addressing the family and saying, you know, I just admit that I often failed in as you were growing up. But I think humility goes to a different level when we start mentioning specific incidences of, this is where I did wrong. Will you please forgive me? I guess one thing that caused me, that I've heard already, is this verse, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. I've heard that, I think, being abused a bit already, where I've almost detected that it's just a proverbial saying, it's not a promise. And there, it may be true, but it came across as, well, if it's a promise, my children would all be serving the Lord because I did it right, was the attitude that's coming across. And when I detect an attitude like that, I say, did you do it right? And I think just free your heart from any pride that's there, and it will allow the Lord to work in ways that hinders him when there is pride in our hearts. Do you have any comments on any of that? David. Thank you. Nathan?
I just want to affirm, I can testify to the blessing of my parents regularly apologize when they see where they have failed. Mm-hmm. It breaks away the walls of the picture of the parents who never makes a mistake. Mm-hmm.
And I would like to say this. If your children grow up and they don't follow the Lord the way we want them to, it does not necessarily make you as a parent a failure, I believe. But I think it's important that we have the humility in our hearts to admit that we have failed, even though you're not a failure. If your children turn out and all follow the Lord, is that because you did it right? No, there's no room for pride in that either. It is by the grace of God, if that is where they're at. And so, you know, either way, I think it can be an attitude of pride from keeping us from admitting our faults. It can be an attitude of pride saying, I did it right. And both are wrong. So remember, pride is what made Satan fall. And as we allow pride in our own hearts, to a certain extent, we become devil-like as we have that characteristic in our own hearts. And it's something we all deal with. Any other comments on that? David?
Isn't it true that no parents are as perfect as what the child could find excuses to make wrong decisions?
That's right. I think, yes, the point I'm driving for is let's have our hearts pure from pride. Let's be humble so it allows the Lord to work. I realize children need to make their own choices, but let's not stand behind this thing of, I did it right. Why didn't they turn out the way we want them to? Because I think that's an attitude of pride, and right there is probably a good reason why maybe they did turn out that way. I don't know. Marvin?
We tend to view parenting as we want to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lord probably views he wants us to be faithful. He wants us to be faithful.
Thank you for that. He wants us to be faithful, not necessarily successful. Okay. This one I just added on, the last point, and that is teach a variety of skills to your children as they grow up. Do them the favor of teaching them just a lot of practical, hands-on abilities, whether it's in housework, the kitchen, the sewing machine, gardening, welding, electrical. I think the more abilities that your children have in those areas, the better equipped they will be to be of service for the Lord. I remember Arthur, when he had the adult winter Bible school here, he made a mention about that. He says, just when you're on the mission field, it's, as I recall, he said, there's not always an Ollie around to come and do your work for you. The more skills you have, just practical skills, the better it equips you to serve. And that is what skills like that should do. It should help us to better serve our fellow man, not just for our own personal benefit. That is about all I have. Are there any questions or comments, maybe some points that you would like to address briefly, or some correction? Again, just that attitude, things that I said. Consider what I say. How was that? Consider what I say, but the Lord give thee understanding in all things. The Lord give you wisdom in knowing how to apply these things to your family situation. One thing that I wanted to mention, didn't have it in my notes. I realize there are singles here. There are husband and wives who don't have children. I'd encourage you, though, you do have an influence on children, and I appreciate the way that you have involved yourselves in other people's children. And I want to commend you for that, and God bless you for that. As parents, we need input from other people. We don't have it all together ourselves.
Thank you very much for what you've been hearing. One thing that's kind of fresh in my mind, we had these young men come to the CAST project last term, and every one of them were diligent workers, and a number of them had considerable skill. They made a very favorable impression on the people they were working for. And now we have another group that is equally as diligent and energetic.
Thanks for your attention. Turn it over to Marvin.